Hey, you handsome, and welcome to Crit Club, a show where four friends watch movies they've never seen from the Criterion Channel streaming service. I'm glad that landed a little bit. And then we talk about them to their heart's content. My name is Peter Allen Clark, and I'm joined by three of the finest film lovers in North America. I'm joined by Corey. Hey, Corey.
Hello.
I'm joined by Angela. Hello there, Angela.
Hello.
And I'm finally joined by Wizard Chris. Oh, hello to you.
Oh, hello, 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 everyone.
Well, listeners, this week we're watching 1989's How to Get Ahead in Advertising, written and directed by Bruce Robinson. It is a surreal black comedy that tells the story of a high-powered advertising corporate exec, Dennis Bagley, who feels rising pressure as the deadline looms for him to pitch a new acne cream campaign. Acne, it's very important, acne. Well, Dennis, he suffers a typical 1980s burnout mental breakdown, one that goes very atypical when a boil begins to form on his neck. What emerges is a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde story that's big on cultural outrage, but maybe a little thin on specifics? My question to you, my dear Crit Club friends, did this movie grow on you, or did it make you want to be lanced?
Oh, Peter. Wow, this is a new level of introduction.
Devilish. Thank you. Very thank you. Thank good. You. Thank Very you. Good. Thank you. Oh, I didn't say why I picked this one.
Why did you pick this one?
Yeah, I guess I was scrambling to look for something to pick. No, I've picked randomly just a lot of 70s and 80s British indie films. I'm really enthralled with sort of that time period in England. I think there's a lot of weird stuff going on, and I'm always down for a black comedy. And then I looked it up and saw the first line of a talking boil grows on a man's neck, and I was like, all right,
you
I
were
guess
hoping
I
this
have
would be
to.
Another The Shout. Like, ooh, Travis.
Oh, we got the Shout reference out early, didn't we?
And I wasn't the one who made it.
Yeah.
Angela, I'm going to start with you. What did you think of How to Get Ahead in Advertising?
Oh, man. Fun fact, my first job was out of college, was at an ad agency where I was sexually harassed, assaulted. Oh, God. Like, advertising is the worst, the very worst. And I was surprised at how much I actually loved this movie.
Oh.
Because I have been around these people and they are that terrible. And but experiencing it in a film, it to the extent that this was like so like hugely a caricature, but not that well, kind of, but not really. Like I felt like, oh, I could watch this from the safety of my home and laugh derisively at the advertising industry. It was unusual and absurd. And I thought Richard E. Grant's performance was electric. I ate every single bite of that ice cream dessert. And I loved that there were times where, like, I'm like, you know, is this really a story of a man going insane? Or is this, like, really happening with the Lance Boyle? And I wove between the two perspectives while I was watching this movie. I'll say I think the ending kind of didn't do that great. I was really prepared to give this a super high rating, but by the end I was like, okay, all right, whatever. But I had fun. It was silly. And now I have to watch With Nail and I, which is Bruce Robinson's other film, which I've heard nothing but great things about, also starring Richard E. Grant.
I think that's also on the channel too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Have you guys seen it?
No.
No.
What about you, Peter?
No, I've not seen it. No, this is my first. Yeah, that would be a great pick. Yeah, I looked up a lot about him, and that I was really interested in that movie after what this it? As well.
I'm going to watch it. Yeah, I think we might. That will be an Angela pick in coming weeks.
Amazing. I think I'm going to go with Wizard next. Wizard, what did you think of How to Get Ahead in Advertising?
Did not like. This movie inspired me a very particular feeling that I think everybody here is of an age that can appreciate this reference. This movie made me feel for people who were like watching movies like 1994, 1995, when Jim Carrey was getting famous and just hating Jim Carrey. Like, I like Jim Carrey, but like, if you didn't like his shtick during like 94 and 95, like, bad time for movies. This is like that. This is like, there's so much yelling and running around and buffoonery that does not land for me at all. It, like, maybe they're supposed to be, like, I can't tell if this is like a morality play or like a farcical morality story about someone who, like, realizes their career is empty, or perhaps they long for something more out of life. It's not about that, as far as I can tell, because like, the Boyle wins, evil mirror universe Richard E. Grant dons an excellent looking mustache, and the film ends with him being like an unbearable bastard. I thought some of the body horror stuff was cool. Like, I liked the gross Boyle effects. They had a great Total Recall vibe, and I really enjoyed that. But it, like, there's nothing that I could really like hang on this movie. Like, I wasn't emotionally invested. I did not enjoy the comedy at all, which is so weird for me. Like,
too
so
black?
Weird.
Too black for you?
No, it's not. It's bland and boring. I honestly, like, I'm going to have a hard time with this movie because I can barely remember any of it. It's just like a manic fever dream, but not in the way that I like a manic fever dream. It just came and went, and, you know, I don't know. Let's see if we can dig up some excitement. But thanks for bearing with me through that Jim Carrey thing. I was thinking about him a lot watching this movie. I was like, this is Jim Carrey from England, and it's not working for me. And I like Richard E. Grant in other things. I thought some of his like delivery of lines and like the dialogue was snappy and fun, but like, there's nothing to grab onto here. This is empty. This is an empty movie.
Okay, empty is the word.
Drained,
Corey, what did you think
you
of?
Will.
Sure, Corey, what did you think of How to Get Ahead in Advertising?
So I will say I don't think we've mentioned this, but the Boyle is voiced by Bruce Robinson himself. He's uncredited, but that's since the writer and director voicing the Boyle. And this is also spine number 120 in the Criterion Collection.
Yes, thank you. Yes, you even reminded me, and I missed that.
I would say that this movie has a lot of clever lines. I think that there is a lot of cleverness in the movie, and I think that if I really liked this movie, it would be one of those where repeated rewatchings would really be fruitful, because I think that there are so many like funny, snappy, witty things that just like zip right by, and like a lot of the just like wordplay, just the pronouncements, and there's little funny jokes in there a lot. I didn't hate this movie at all. I think I'm going to be sort of giving it sort of a mids review on this. I'm kind of a sucker. I know this came out in like what, 88 or 89 or something like that, but I'm a sucker for that like 90s anti-advertising, like no logo ad busters type, you know, mentality of like, you know, screw all advertising, screw all that, you know. I grew up in that, and I enjoy like sort of seeing a movie sort of based around, you know, making fun of this world. I think it really starts off really strong, but then it sort of like falters. I think too many of the scenes just kind of like either don't need to be there or they stretch on for too long. Like his whole thing of just wearing the apron, being naked, and like it was going on for like too long, and it wasn't funny either, because I was just like, is this boomer humor that I'm watching? Like Frida,
is it?
Yeah, Frida like said that it almost seemed like Woody Allen-esque, where it's like you're supposed to just be laughing at the thing, but not necessarily if it's funny. It's just I don't know.
It's interesting that you say that, because I got a lot of like future British comedy like vibes from this. Like I got like Mighty Boosh vibes from like the weird like dark weirdness of the situations and like the comic absurdity of it all. I don't know.
Yeah, I think if you, and also I agree, if you don't like this main character, you are not going to like this movie, or not like, but just like, if you don't find that performance good or interesting or worth watching or whatever, I mean, you're not supposed to like this guy. This guy's a villain. Like, he is just from the beginning. So, but Frida, you know, especially just hated watching him, hated seeing his, you know, visage and hearing how he talked and all that stuff. I think we're going to hear from her later. ultimately, I think, though, that there's a lot of good cleverness in here. There's too much, like, fluff and scenes that don't go anywhere. I think it's kind of short on action. I think if they would have trimmed out a lot, kept the density of the clever lines, and then where the movie ends, I think that should be the end of Act Two, and we should have another act to kind of like wrap things up. I think that might have helped what you were talking about, Angela, where it just kind of like ends and it doesn't end very satisfactorily.
Runs out
I think
of
that
gas.
Should have been the end of Act Two. We should have gotten something else that really brought home something, whatever the message of this movie is. I don't know. I didn't hate it, but like, I think it's not a perfect movie or anything like that. Peter, what'd you think?
Wow, I'm so like excited about this variety of opinions.
It's quite a spread.
This is really interesting. So what did I think about this? Because I think I'm landing more on Angela's side than any other side. I think I really enjoyed parts of it and was more like disappointed or kind of like not bored, but just kind of like meh on a lot of other parts of it. And it's very interesting to hear you all talk about like future and past comedies, because to me, this comedy or this movie felt like one of, well, not one of my very favorite Christmas movie, Scrooged.
Yes.
This movie felt
okay, yeah.
So much like Scrooge.
See, I was thinking of like Thank You for Smoking and
I thought about that
as
well.
And what's the Philip Morris, I Love You Philip Morris? Like those
yeah.
But you're right. This is more like Scrooged.
Like it felt really imbued with and I kind of alluded to this in my intro. It felt really imbued with this sort of like, I guess counterculture you would take it, but like this backlash to high-powered corporate 80s work materialism, that era. I mean, this movie came out in 89. And I think that there was a lot to sort of hang on to with the rage and with the, you know, with, I guess, the prelude, the prologue to No Logo, to Naomi Klein's No Logo. but it's still like, I kept sort of asking and writing down like, well, what is the message? Like, what is the philosophy? Like, this is just a bunch of negatives, but are there any sort of like, not like positives as in happiness, but like, what are the like prescriptive sort of elements? Like, what's the philosophy? But a lot of that was sort of swept away whenever this Boyle started talking. Like, I mean, I fucking lost my shit with this. Like, the highs of this movie were very high for me. Like, very fucking high. This fucking Boyle opens one eye and says, "Hey, ya, handsome." And I was just like, and I just fucking lost my shit. And then you see it the second time and it spits in the mirror. And there's just like, but at the same time, Wizard, I definitely agree with you where I think that second half is just very, seems like it was written in like a very different time, I guess. It felt like the writer probably wrote the first half in 1 year or like, and then 2 years passed and he wrote the second half or something. Like, and I felt like it was very imbalanced and uneven in a way of like, apparently once, you know, it's grown a mustache. The fucking Boyle growing a mustache. Like, I lost my goddamn shit.
Yeah.
But whenever, you know, mustache thing pops up, apparently now he really loves his wife with all of his heart. Like, I'm like, where was any of this love shown for the wife whenever it was the normal thing?
Is it
thing?
Love or lust? Like, it seems like the Boyle was just lusting after her.
No. It felt like the Boyle was like, "Oh, my darling Julia, everything I will." Like, it was like real pining for love that didn't seem apparent in any sort of the first half of the movie. And also sex sort of plays a weird, like, you know, what's the word? Sort of like, I don't know, an entendre filled role, like in the second half that's never shown or never even acted about. And like the transitions were weird. There was just a lot of like sort of showing and not telling. I don't know, like, stop telling us about how much, I'm not saying this lasciviously, but stop telling us about how much this new mustache guy is a horn dog and like give us some scenes where we're actually seeing this in action and seeing this discomfort arise and all this sort of stuff. There's part of me that agrees with you, Corey, about like, would have really loved a third act to tie it all together. There's also part of me that finds its briskness and its ending like on a like English countryside in this like really amoral monologue, like kind of fascinating that ends with the title of a famous English hymn. Like, I don't know if you all know, that's like an Anglican hymn. Like, what is it? Here I, you know, down to rest and on England's green and shores or something. I read the line, but he's quoting like a famous Anglican hymn. But there's something like really, I wrote down in my notes that it felt like the polar opposite of the Choose Life monologue from Trainspotting.
Oh, wow.
Which just got a Criterion release, by the way. That's all it does.
You know, and like, and so like, I kind of am so glad I watched this movie. Like, I think it's very flawed. I think it's very sloppy. I think it's very shaggy is a word I think I would describe to this. But I think there's something, there's like some sort of third rail of this movie culturally about like corporate excess, about, you know, like general sort of consumer growing dissatisfaction, about advertising and all these sorts of things. Like, it feels like a lot of emotion without a lot of like finding the right words to express it. And so I've talked for a long time, but these are my messy thoughts about How to Get Ahead on Advertising, and I'm happy to talk about it with you all.
Well, I mean, I think it's messy because like his Boyle is just like still him. Like, you know, it's not like it has a conflicting personality. It's just an, even more of an asshole, and he's already an asshole. So, you know, where's the conflict here? Is that it? I guess maybe he's trying to be a little bit better or something after his whole mental breakdown.
Do you not agree? Do you all not agree that this turned out to be sort of a Jekyll and Hyde story?
Yeah, but the Jekyll was already Hyde.
Yeah, it's not but that you even like there's not a huge difference contrast between the two personalities.
See, and I felt that there was kind of an arc of like we're introduced to this character with a great monologue.
Oh
great
my god, monologue. One of the best. I loved it. Actually,
yeah. Those first like two scenes are really good.
Robert Sean Bean was in that scene, by the way. Did you notice Sean Bean?
No. Oh, and, I
he didn't die.
Yeah, right.
Doesn't he die in everything?
Well, his career died. Does that count?
Okay.
I also didn't mean to agree with you that Robert E. Grant is fucking incredibly watchable in this movie. He carries
Frida
it.
Frida disagrees, but yeah.
Oh, well, for sure. But I really thought, sorry, and also he is in Saltburn. He is the old man
he's
in,
the
Saltburn,
dad in Saltburn
that I was excited to see.
I mean, one thing I think that's important to acknowledge is that in this period of time, there were a lot of really sloppy British comedies, like, say, for instance, The Young Ones, which is one of my all-time favorite ones.
Good comedy.
And then later on, it's not as sloppy, but it still kind of has similar messages. It is absolutely fabulous. And so I was A-okay with the sloppiness. The name of the production company is Handmade Films. So I was like, I am on board for that.
Harrison's film production company.
Absolutely. But I mean, it does mean that your film experience might not be as satisfying. But I still like, I love Richard E. Grant with his cardboard little hat. I found that whole scene incredibly compelling.
Well, let's go through it, I guess. Yeah. Does it seem like one that would be good to go through sort of beat by beat? I don't know.
I don't know about beat. We can go through it in chunks.
Yeah, let's go through it. I mean, because I do want to say, because I do want to, there's a quote about that cardboard that I love, but I do want to say that I did think that there was a bit of an arc, because it did feel like a Jekyll and Hyde story, almost, sort of, because yes, I agree with you that the first two scenes are so good. Oh, and then when he talks to his boss and his boss is on the phone, like maybe the first ever scene where that has been done.
Yeah, right.
but it did feel like he was sliding into, like, or like his conscience was raising up. Like he was becoming a more conscious person. Right. And then that necessitated a Jekyll to rise up and like push down, or sorry, a Hyde to rise up and push down Jekyll. It's sort of how I thought it. He was an asshole at the very beginning, but it feels like that conversation on the train, which is another great monologue, great monologues in this movie, I think, this rising conscious necessitated the rise of a Hyde to push down the rest of him. Yeah, I don't know. That's how I sort of thought of it.
You know what this film was missing was an instigating scenario, like, he could have received some information that the product he was selling was toxic. He could have received word that people had died and that there was a cover up. There was just no action that made us understand why he's having this transformation. And he was already kind of in the middle of this meltdown. We didn't really see what is this guy like before this meltdown.
Now it's just kind of like writer's block, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like the inciting incident is that this boil cream, it's hard to write an ad for. And yeah, that the rest of the movie is procrastination, which is what it feels like.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So I think if he would have had some conflict in there, like you're saying, Angela, it would have, I don't know, made us more, you know, sympathetic to him as a character, or we would have seen more of a diametrically opposed, you know, personalities of him and the boil or something like that. Yeah, that probably would have been.
Because it usually is with stuff like this, like there's a cyclical character and an outside force acts upon them or their life or the world, causing a refocus or another perspective to change. And there really wasn't, except for a work assignment.
I just feel like the writer must have worked in advertising and was like, isn't it just clear that advertising is so horrible? And working in advertising is absolutely horrible. Because I'll tell you, the way that they portrayed it was right the fuck on in terms of the high pressure, the clients, the way that you present, and the whole line about, well, you know, I never show my work in progress. And it is why I'm in marketing, which is vastly different. Not really, but kind of.
Well, so didn't find him a sympathetic character? Like, I feel like I did once there started to be that turn.
But he was too annoying about the turn. Like, okay, he just kept screaming and running around naked and so yelling and just, like.
No, but.
But I guess I felt about it as like mental health wise, which this movie was like, yikes.
I loved his whole section where he's at lunch with his wife and he's talking authentically about his anxiety. That was hugely compelling for me in terms of having sympathy for this character, because he's like, I don't want to go back into this office. And I have been in that position in an advertising agency where I'm like, oh my God, I don't like, and that total anxiety and the high blood pressure and the desire to smoke cigarettes all the time. I guess maybe I've just lived that, and whoever wrote this just didn't feel the need to show how that is.
He talks about how bad it is and about how, like, you know, we can market any food. It's got to be high in something or low in something else or whatever. Like, I mean, he talks about it a lot, but yeah, we don't really see the bad.
Well, yeah, for some reason, I really empathized. I really felt sympathetic because it felt like, I don't know, because I definitely agree with you all that he was such an asshole and that the turn maybe wasn't enough. I think it was also me projecting a lot of like, oh, working a job, doing something that you know is actively terrible, and the pressure that builds, and just mental health in general. Like, I honestly think like the idea of having a breakdown over burnout or something like that was something that it's like I'm going to probably sympathize with more often than not.
I can, but like my notes here, I'm just looking back at my notes and I said, this part is really annoying. This is referring to his like breakdown where he's like, you know, spraying the stuff everywhere and he's like in the apron and stuff. I said, this must be uproariously hilarious for someone with a very different sense of humor than mine. And so, like, just the fact of him doing it, like, I don't know, it just wasn't funny to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it felt like a dip from the first couple scenes that I really did like. Mm-hmm. So I kept waiting for like, where are the jokes? But
yeah, it makes me wonder because I do. There was a lot of the comedy that I agree with you, Wizard, was like not good and did feel like slapsticky Jim Carrey. But then the fucking thing grows a mustache. like maybe like there was like conceptual things about it where I was like, I don't give a shit. This is fucking hilarious. He puts that box on his head and she comes in. I wrote it down. Don't pretend you haven't noticed my cardboard box. Like,
I did. That was funny.
I laughed out loud multiple times, but then there were these real valleys.
We're skipping over.
Oh, go for
the
it.
Cartoon
Please,
birds.
Go back. Oh. Yeah, which I meant to talk about, which were like very strange, out of place.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was excited though. I was excited at first. I was like, oh, okay, we're taking a turn here, you know. But then, the cartoon birds never came back. No, I don't even know what the hell they were doing there.
Well, what did you all think? Birds. Did you all know anything about this movie? Did you all look up the thing?
No,
about
but
this
I will
movie?
Say spoiler alert to the Criterion cover.
Yes.
I mean, it just has like a boil with a devil, like devil outfit on his shoulder or whatever.
Can I just say that it took me till the end of the movie to get the joke, how to get a head in advertising?
Yep. Just
Lord.
Hilarious.
Hilarious. It writes itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say, as we go back a little bit, I really enjoyed the scene where he runs through like the different ways to make an ad. It's like another like great performance from Richard Grant, where he's like, there are like four basic types of ads, and he runs through. I use this because I know it works.
Oh my God!
I thought like there's it's a one man show, and it demands a lot of its lead actor, and I was so annoyed for so much of this movie, and I could not dig into any part of it. I'm baffled.
I'm baffled because usually I'm the one who gets offended up front by a movie and just can't get into it, and it's just refreshing to see that it happens to someone else.
I mean, I was baffled at the just the diagnosis of the doctors not wanting to lance this gigantic softball-sized boil because he's grown an attachment to it, or he might have a psychiatric reaction.
That's a joke.
From it.
That's a joke on mental health stuff, and it was hilarious.
I guess so.
I
did think that was a joke. I did also think that was a joke. I didn't know if I thought it was. Wizard, I would love to know when did you turn on this. Oh, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't drink Well Seltzer while recording. When did you turn on this movie? What did it have you at any point?
I'm trying to think. You know, I enjoyed the first scene. I enjoyed maybe the first like 15, 20 minutes of the movie. And then it just kind of like for the first little bit, I'm like, okay, like high powered, like advertising guy, like this is a movie that's going to have like some sharp, like tete-a-tete, like conversation, or like, you know, it's going to be kind of like a comedy of manners kind of thing with like some kind of edge. But then, yeah, he's like in the tub, like wearing an apron and like spraying shit all over the house. And I'm just like, okay, like movie is off the rails, but maybe we're still going somewhere. And it just never, like nothing ever pays off. It's just
that
like
that reveal. I knew a boil was coming, and that reveal still made me scream. I loved it.
Well, and Frida was already starting to check out of the movie. Yeah, Frida was already checking out of the movie. But once that little like Cronenbergian nightmare showed up, I yelled her back in the room. I'm like, Frida.
Yeah, yeah. And, like,
and that got her stuck back in.
And like, I like some of that stuff. Again, the weird creature design was super fun, and I loved like the growth of this disgusting head. I loved all that shit. Super gross. But like. Like, if the movie is trying to be pointed about something, I am not sophisticated or smart enough to grasp that point. And if the movie is over my head, that's fine. But like, it's just like it's loud. No. I just found it loud, and I found it annoying, and I found the jokes never really pay off. And I guess maybe 30 minutes in, I was like, nope, I don't know what we're doing here, but what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm. Very fair. I mean, I don't think it's over your head at all. It's like, I completely maintain that this is high on emotion, but really not big, can't find the words to express them, I think, in a lot of ways. And I mean, I don't know. Like, I think I look at this movie and what is the point of this movie as a whole? And I really find it as like, the mental unwellness that it takes to continue living in a cycle of, you know, of, I don't know, consumerism and, you know, environmental havoc and, I don't know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, and I really felt like this was like just a story about mental breakdowns more than it was about the world itself.
Yeah, well, but for me, like, this was prescient, right? This film was made in 1989. That is... Mm-hmm. Like 30 years ago, and or more. I can't do math right now. And I feel like all the things that this film was talking about that would happen in the future have come to pass. And that was a little terrifying.
Yeah. And I guess like at the end, like he doesn't get better and basically just sort of, I mean, there's a line in there just about how just everything gets destroyed with greed and like our best means of communicating. I really liked his like thing about like how, you know, television is like the greatest invention of mankind. Like we have mass communication and it just absolutely got destroyed by greed. And like that you could say the same thing about the internet. That's just actively being destroyed by greedy people and all that stuff. But then, yeah, the boil wins in the end. So like that's, I don't know. I guess that's the message.
Yeah, I don't know.
A shitty person becomes worse. Is that the message?
Yeah, I mean, that's the way you got to survive in the world. Is you just got to be shittier and shittier.
Like a shitty person leans into their shittiness. Like, you know, just realizes that there's not. Well, I guess because, yeah, I don't know. Okay, so, but just to kind of continue a little bit through, because there's just, it's just weird. There's just like plotting things in it that I wonder if there could be a third act or whatever. Okay, so it goes to the psychoanalyst. And then there's the shit about his grandfather.
Fucking a wallaby or something. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Maybe it was a kangaroo.
This, which I just that was kind of funny.
Pouch. I don't think that's... I think everybody blew things way out of proportion.
And that's when he sees he gets a mustache. Sorry.
I mean, for me, it was very interesting to me because, like, I have never witnessed someone going through that level of a psychiatric meltdown. Right. So watching this staged performance of what could have been one, I found really interesting. And that sucked me in on that level. I was curious whether any of you had witnessed that level of a mental breakdown and what you thought of the portrayal of this mental breakdown. Because that to me was like the story was like the progression of this mental breakdown.
I mean, it was cartoonish.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jim Carrey-ish.
Yes.
Friend of the pod, Jim Carrey. Jim, we love you.
Regular listener. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, I guess I've, you know, witnessed some, not nearly this, but like, yeah, within the realm, you know, and it's like, I think there's definitely a conversation to be had about whether this movie makes light of these sorts of things in a way that is like, maybe poking fun of a naked man in an apron jumping and, you know, it kind of is. That's used a little bit for humor and is... Yeah,
it was cartoonish, but I found that the wife's reactions were very realistic. And like to that end, I thought that it was in some ways... like I felt more compassion for people dealing... Like the loved ones and caregivers who are dealing with seriously mentally ill people. And I don't know that I've seen that often in cinema. So for me, that adds value... as this, you know, in terms of what this movie provides. I would like to see more movies like that. And if you actually, listeners, you have any recommendations on films that accurately present a complete mental breakdown on a manic scale, I would be interested to watch those films.
Melancholia, baby. Oh, yeah. One fucking word. Melancholia.
Okay.
Nothing has...
Is that a Lars von Trier movie?
It is.
Oh, Jesus. That's like a...
I agree with you, and that's what I thought going to watch it and bracing myself to watch it, but nothing has exhibited my personal clinical depression as accurately and as empathetically and as realistically as that fucking movie did. Mm. That is a really brutally honest movie in a way that somehow doesn't feel as cheaply horrendous as his other movies do to me.
I do want to see like examples of bipolar mania for some reason. So I don't know.
Melancholia. Yeah. Check. Right. I mean, that's right. Yeah. It's. Right. I mean, it's not an easy watch, but you're asking for it.
I am.
Only,
okay.
And then he goes to the hospital to get it lanced.
I thought it was a mental hospital, and they also said it's nice to see you back again. And so I'm like. Does that mean like that this is a mental hospital? This is his second time there, and she seemed to already have a relationship with the psychiatrist, right? It's not like she was just like, I have to call Dr. So and so, and she calls him up. So to me, I was able to pick up that kind of backstory. Like, I don't think this is the first time this has happened.
I don't know. I really enjoyed this part because I wasn't expecting this from this movie. Like, I don't know what I was expecting from, he gets a talking boil. He keeps sort of talking. Maybe this changes life. Maybe whatever. Blah, 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 blah. But I wasn't expecting for the boil to become the second head and for him to push down the other head to a boil on the opposite side. Yeah. And I was like pretty excited I don't know where this movie's going then.
Yeah, no,
and you get the mustache.
The mustache was great.
Gross, like a saucy mustache.
I mean, you have to know it's evil somehow.
the movie doesn't know where it's going. That's why it just ends. Yes. It ends with a man riding a horse, delivering a monologue.
And about
then,
cars.
About
cars.
And then it just ends. Because they're like, okay, I guess we're done. Like, it just, like...
The person I watched this movie with was afraid that he was going to, like, try to fuck the horse.
Good callback.
They did sort of set that up, didn't they?
Yeah.
Everything sort of after the turn, it really did fall pretty flat.
Yeah, then there's just like this anniversary party thing that doesn't.
Oh yeah.
What happens?
Where? Who's?
So
why?
I did really like two things that happened. I did really like him having the brilliant idea to we'll make Zits popular.
That was pretty funny.
That and also very Scrooged. Felt like in the same sort of like comedic mind of sort of Scrooge thing. And I really kind of liked the video and like the video of him talking and then
and having the conversation with it. I thought that was
amazing.
That was one of the more clever things in the movie. Yes.
It was pretty I thought that was pretty unique and awesome. I thought it was really creative.
Why are you having, because it's me, I know what it's going to say.
That was pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was set up really well. Like, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, but all you've got is like all you've got is then sex is a factor, and it turns out to be a big factor in a way that I just really didn't understand, because it was never, you know, it didn't feel like a sexless world before, but you know, like the Boyle's new love for his wife, it also felt like,
and they never set up that they were having, did they? I don't think they set up that they were having marital problems or anything like that before, so.
I think that it was just a way to give stakes to this horrible second half of the film, like, and to make it seem, make the new head, the Boyle taking over more of a threat, and to make us feel more sympathy for the new Boyle or the old guy. And it just didn't work out because they didn't execute it well in terms of, I don't even think there was a scene where they actually did have sex. Like, all of a sudden it's 4 a.m. I don't even know, like, because he's like, I'm going to fuck your wife at 1 a.m. or whatever. I just don't think it followed through. And that as a scene, maybe they shot it and it didn't play off well. But that would have added tension if they actually had that scene and, like, had the Boyle talking while he's trying to have sex with the wife. That would have been hilarious. I would have been entertained. But it probably would have made the movie even longer and tortured Wizard more. So maybe it's good they didn't.
Maybe I could have found something to, like, dig my teeth into, a little meat on this bone.
I mean, instead the Boyle, like, well, first of all, I guess glue doesn't work because he tries to glue its mouth shut. But
I was just thinking that. What was the other movie we've talked about? Like, the rules, where there's, like, the rules aren't established. Mm-hmm. And, like, what is the, you know, like, is glue or lancing or, like, all these things are supposedly tried. Yeah.
Yeah, because they lance him off, but then he's still there. So, I don't know.
I thought the glue was pimple cream, which would have made it funnier. Like,
would have made sense, yeah.
That would have made
That's
sense.
That's funny. I thought it was glue. I read it as super glue.
Yeah, it was.
He said glue, I thought.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but then the only person he ends up freaking out is that woman he's, like, dancing with. And it's just like, it's not funny. It was just, like, creepy. I don't know. Yeah.
I think some part of me did like him talking in the mirror to the Boyle and said, like, stay awake for the fucking, or something. There's some sort of just, like, over-the-top villainous about it. Like, you can tell that, well, he started off as an asshole. This guy has to be a real big asshole. Yeah, mustache twirling. Yes. Yes. And then I was really excited whenever she got it. But I think that's strange that I guess she got the combination from the very hard to read combination 000 from a dream that made all of this feel realer than I think was maybe meant to. And then that turned into nothing. Like, I really, as much as I really did enjoy that video scene, that TV scene, it all landed very flat and he turned it off and it had no impact.
Mm. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it was supposed to be his, the screed from his previous life coming into, like, in, like, informing her of, like, who he was, and I thought she was gonna, like, realize that it was a different person now or something, but yeah, nothing really just happens. I don't know.
Yeah, and like, there's part of me that was like, oh, I hope this video is the reveal that, okay, here's what I was hoping, because I wrote it down way earlier in the movie that I really wanted to see it. Like, I was hoping that her watching the video was the reveal that the boil was actually true and real.
Yes.
And I was specifically wanting to see the boil smoke because because he had left with the cardboard box on his head to grab the cigarette because the boil wanted the cigarette. And I was really hoping that the video would be showing the boil smoking. And I was so excited for that.
Hope yeah, it dashed.
I mean, I guess I don't want to say should have, but like a normal screenplay, yes, would go where this is the point where she realizes what's going on and that this mm-hmm. person is not her husband. And then the next act would be them, you know, grappling with that. But instead, she just, I guess, leaves him off screen, maybe, I think.
Yes, and, off screen. And then, lots, so much stuff happens off screen.
And then he's riding a horse.
So much stuff happens off screen.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because he burns all of the, I guess, the old advertisements and her letter near the horse stables. Ugh, I don't know. Right. Yeah.
Nope.
The wizard. I don't think I've ever picked a movie that you so disagreed with.
I'm confused and shocked and a little bit frightened because, I don't know, I expect these things to pan out better. I was like, oh, this could be good. And I...
Anyways, yeah, it, you know, it's
I got nothing to say. I'm just like,
No, yeah, no, of course. I wanna highlight my favorite joke that I didn't get until like towards the end of the movie, and it happens well at the beginning. Well, my favorite joke besides the mustache and the spitting. The spitting. Why the fuck is it spitting? It really cracks me up. It's a really great decision. But the character's name is Dennis Bagley. And there's like, I think in the first meeting with his boss, while the boss is like on the phone or blah, 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 he says he's got another product and it's a boil on a bag, Bagley boil on a bag, you know, thing. I was like, that's pretty funny. That's another pun. But I was like, that's
yeah. See, and that's what makes me not hate this movie is that I think that there's a lot of little funny, clever things that happen in this movie throughout. And there's a lot of like funny lines and all that. Yeah, I think that if they would have leaned into that as their strength, it would have been a better movie.
Yeah. 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 Just who knows with this one?
Did this one?
It makes me want to watch more of his movies. So, yes. Angela, if you want to.
I'm thinking about it.
Ooh, I'll watch it. Gladly watch it. What were you asking, Angela?
Did this film get any awards? I don't, like, of course, I could Google this.
I don't think so.
No, I tried to look around for it, and I couldn't find too much writing on it. But no awards were mentioned in the Wikipedia page, at least, or on like the Criterion description of it. Yeah, I don't know. Apparently, Richard E. Grant has been in a ton of things that I've seen, but I've never clocked him until like
he has one of those.
I really enjoyed him in this movie. I really did.
My favorite Richard Grant movie actually is Age of Innocence. He plays Lefferts, who is a gossip, which is very silly, but. And probably the least.
Gosford Park, which I adore.
Oh, you love Gosford Park? I had no idea.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, I know. See, that's why this is funny, because Corey hates that movie, and I know that.
I just don't like Robert Altman. Robert Altman's a fucking bore.
Wizard, what's your opinion on Gosford Park while we have you here?
I haven't actually seen Gosford Park, so that's like, I don't consider Robert Altman a bore, so maybe something good could happen there.
Robert Altman, upstairs, downstairs, class-based murder mystery, set in Downton Abbey. Go for it. It's fucking good.
All right, all right.
Ryan Phillippe at the height of his power.
Some stars just burn too brightly.
Yeah.
I'm actually...
No awards for How to Get Ahead in Advertising, and I would have...
What?
Yeah, well, I think that Richard E. Grant's performance is kind of amazing. I haven't seen anything of its like in cinema. Even though Krita hated it, I mean, it was effective. He's meant to be hated, so I don't know.
Yeah, he leaned in.
Totally.
I mean, even that last monologue, he was there for it, and he was leaning in, and I just was on the edge of my seat watching him. I was just so excited to watch him. I'm not sure if I have too much more to say about this movie.
Oh, I have a few more things. What did you all think of the scene where he's having that dinner party, and he is being derisively rude to that woman? And I loved her strength. Like, she seemed...
I think Men Should Bleed. I thought was a really good
one. Oh, so great.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I
mean, I was just surprised that she came back. Like, I don't know. If someone was that much of an asshole to me, I would, like, not want to go hang out at their house again.
I really wanted her and his wife to have an affair. Like, that would have been interesting to me. Like, because she does, she's like, she is my friend. You have to be nice to her. And so I was a little bummed that they didn't thread the needle there.
I did like that she's a vegan when we first meet her, and then at one point he's like, oh, she'll fall off like pretty soon, and then at the end of the movie we're at another party and she's a meat eater now. She's like, yeah, I wasn't getting enough protein, minerals and stuff from just eating green stuff. I thought it was very funny, like, as a vegetable
person, I missed that.
I was like, yeah, that happens. Like, very clever, some clever moments. It's not a one, you know?
Also, Rachel Ward was stunning. What a stunning woman.
Yeah.
I said this about the Celebration mother last week, and I'll go ahead. Boy, what a stunning woman.
This movie was full of, like, Victoria's Secret era nightgowns, if you're into that sort of thing.
Boy, the dress she wore to their, like, anniversary dinner was a lot, with all the big, huge... folds.
And for a movie about advertising, didn't it seem to you like they were advertising Givenchy?
Yes.
Givenchy, I don't know what that is.
Yes. It's a fashion line.
Fashion house.
It's very high end.
Givenchy Fresh.
Yeah. And there's that huge perfume bottle, and I'm like, that's got to be something. And then that they just keep talking, oh, that's a Givenchy dress. I'm like, there's no place for this. What is this about?
There's no place for this.
I don't know. I still... can't help but feel connected to this movie's sense of nihilism and amorality and like helplessness against the world's apparent embrace of nihilism and amorality. Like, this is a movie that wants there to be some sort of reckoning, some sort of better humanity, and it's a movie that says, well, there's no point in trying for that because this is the easy way and this is the more fruitful way to get through it. I don't know. And like, I do think, the more I think about it, the more I see Scrooge in this movie. Like, because that is another movie that's just like, humanity's terrible. Like, this is all bullshit and we're just selling shit to shit people and this is, you know, whatever. And they're just like this real, there's just this real gutter water idea that I honestly think culturally very fascinating for that time and what was going on in the ether of like the hangover of 80s materialism and corporate greed. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a lot to say about it. And like this movie, it says a lot of things are bad, but like a lot of the things it says are bad kind of conflict with each other. Yeah, there's just no ideology. There's just, you know, a lot of emotions. It's very grunge. That's what this movie is. This movie is very, like, angst. It's very edgelordy grunge.
Well, it's like Gen X-y, like, sort of themes, but, like, a lot of boomer humor. So I guess it's the sort of weird mixture of both.
Have you guys seen... Who here has seen Young Ones?
No.
Oh, my...
I know of it because that's where...
I put my hand up.
Drop Dead Fred guy came from.
Okay, you need to see it, Corey, because it's really trashy and it goes nowhere, but it is kind of hilarious and has famous musical acts from the 80s, and you can see a ton of very famous British actors, comedians, doing weird shit, and it's super fun.
And gross puppets. It also and gross has puppets. A fondness for gross puppets.
For sure.
Yeah.
And it also made me think of, especially when I was looking at this close-up of this singer and all of her zits, there's just something that I've always thought about English sensibilities with regard to, like, the grotesque. Like, I was, and still kind of am, a huge fan of the show League of Gentlemen that was on in the UK. But also, like, a lot of UK humor is, like, a lot of... warts and pimples and boils and the grotesque faces. They really love that shit. They really eat it up. I don't have anything else to say about it beyond that. I don't know. Anything else? Great. Okay. Cool. Well, let's...
Wizard is in there. So not even into this. I haven't seen Wizard like this in a long time.
I don't know. I do... It's one of those rare moments where I'm like, man, nothing engages or lands, or like, how do I feel about this movie? Nothing.
It's been since Deep Cover that I feel like you were angry at Deep Cover.
About my dislike for Deep Cover. Just, I feel very strongly about that movie.
Well, let's roll. Listeners, this is Crit Club, and we do things a little differently. Where instead of rating things on a 1 to 5 or 1 to 10 scale, we, in honor of the multihedron, what is the word?
Polyhedron.
Polyhedral. I was trying to like dodecahedral, if that's an accurate word.
That's a double. Yeah.
The 20-sided die is what I'm referring to, listeners. And we rate things here on in our ever-growing love of 20-sided die. All things D&D, all things role-playing. We rate things on a 1 to 20 scale. And of course, you can follow along to this and all of the movies that we have rated in the past by going to those show notes and seeing the helpful Crit Club spreadsheet of record, which is included therein for you. And I'm going to go the order that we did to start with. And I believe, Wizard, you were first with this. How you rolling when it comes to how to get ahead in advertising?
Angela was actually first. Yeah.
I don't think so. Angela was second.
No, I was not. You were first, Wizard, because you were the one. I was like, how do I?
Yes.
I'm like, oh, Wizard didn't like this movie. What am I going to do?
Okay.
I remember thinking that because I wanted to pick Angela second because I think she's used to going last.
Listeners, right in next week and
I think I'm correct
and vindicate me. That's all I ask. Nevertheless,
you might not have to wait that long.
Nevertheless, I am happy to go first. It's a two. I'm actually, you know,
whoa.
What?
So, it's not a one.
Wait. I think you should give it a one.
I do. No, you, I don't, because I don't actually want to give it a one. See, what I do want to do is, man, I rated Deep Cover a five. Well, I definitely liked this. I definitely liked this less than Deep Cover, but differently. I'm going to give it a two.
Jesus. Okay. All right. I owe you one.
Yeah.
A two from Wizard. Angela, since I called on you second at the very beginning of the show, which the record will attest, what are you rolling when it comes to how to get ahead in advertising?
You know, I had a good time with this film for multiple reasons, and it was very satisfying. Very satisfying film. And I'm going to give it a 17, hearty 17, for all of its flaws. And I like imperfections. And I think it was a wonderful reflection back at the excess of the 80s. And I think that Richard E. Grant should get a retroactive award for that performance because I haven't seen anything like it. And I think it's not fair to equate it to Jim Carrey because Jim Carrey, it's a totally different thing.
Richard E. Grant is an artist. I'm shocked.
I'll just say, when you were giving your score, Wizard was just shaking his head.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't looking. That's okay. How many times have I had to sit through like films that made me feel horrible about myself and humanity for hours? So I feel like it's okay this one time that Wizard has a film that he doesn't like. It's okay.
I mostly like things most of the time.
Yeah.
Man, I don't think I do.
So yeah, 17.
17. Corey, how do you roll on this?
I'm gonna give 11. It just gets over the halfway mark for me, and I think a lot of that is for the clever writing and a couple moments of just kind of really clever stuff in the movie. But I don't think it. I didn't feel anything stronger than that about it. How about you, Peter?
Man, we haven't added two since.
This is quite a spread.
I'm just dealing with this because the lowest we've had. This is the lowest we've had since Belladonna of Sadness.
Oh my.
Oof, this is
this a Belladonna of Sadness for you, Wizard?
Oh God, no! What could like that's the there's a bottom, you know, and Belladonna is definitely down there.
Yeah, I think I'm going 14. I think when I ended this movie, I was like 13, 14, and I see all of these flaws. Well, maybe I don't know, and maybe listeners and friends, I am just a little bit too charmed by the prosthetics and the effects that happen.
Maybe I did like it
just a bit too much.
Frida will watch entire movies that are just for the puppets.
The puppetry is great. That's why it doesn't get a one, you know?
And the highs were remarkably high, but there were some like really low lows. And I think the thing that brings it up from like the middle of the pack for me is sort of it feeling like a cultural touchstone. And I'm just honestly really glad to have watched it. Like this just feels like of a time and of a place and of a sentiment that doesn't feel like it's coming out of nowhere. It feels like I see all the history that led into it. And I also really see so much of what came after it, not just with film, but I think I agree with what I said of this feeling like a prologue to Naomi Klein's No Logo. Like this really feels like a swell of a sentiment tide that's kind of like rolling into a lot of 90s angst and activism spread. I don't know. There's just something about this that I really connected with. So I think 14 is a solid score for me, and that's what I'm going with. Great. Well, thank you all so much for discussing how to get ahead in advertising. This is really fun. I feel very sad about the two. This is going to stick with me. I'm going to have to... I'll take my Klonopin so I can go to sleep tonight soundly.
No.
But
it's all a journey. It's all a journey. You know, you're not going to like every movie.
That's so true.
I want to do what we're watching next week first before we get into emails. This isn't the end of the line for Crit Club. Stick with us next week for what we're going to watch next week and watch it along with us. I believe it is a wizard pick?
Mm-hmm. It's a wizard pick.
It is a
wizard pick.
Wizard, what are we watching next week?
Oh, my goodness. All right, everybody. So Criterion Channel is doing like a Ken Russell thing, and I would love for us to all watch The Devils together because it's a bonkers-ass, super fun movie. I like Ken Russell a lot. I think he's like a weirdo, like decadent visionary type. And so we are going to be watching some later period Ken Russell stuff. We are going to be watching Gothic from 1986. Gabriel Byrne, Julian Sands, and podcast alumnus Natasha Richardson. We are checking out The Sexiest Writer's Retreat in History. This is Ken Russell's telling of how the novel Frankenstein was written. Our characters, Ken Russell imagines the origins of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein as only he could, with a feverish, hallucinatory excess bordering on the demented. Sweet. On a stormy night in 1816 at Lord Byron's villa in Switzerland, poet Percy Shelley and his wife-to-be Mary Godwin get together, tell some scary stories, and have a weird psychosexual freak out.
Ooh.
I think it's going to be good. I think, Angela, I think it's going to be a bodice ripper. I think bodices will be ripped.
Ooh. Don't tempt me with a good time.
And I'm excited to go down this little spooky rabbit hole with everybody.
I don't think I've seen a Ken Russell movie. I think I mentioned that last week, or maybe not on air. Excited to watch.
You're
very excited to watch. No.
Tommy.
Yeah, I've never been interested in that. But yeah, tell me if I should. Listeners, but we would love for you to join us on and watch this movie along with us. And you need to tell us what you think. You need to. Tell us what you think about this movie that we watched, the last movies that we watched, movies that you want to watch, movies that you will watch with us. We would absolutely love to hear from you. We love all of our listeners, and we love getting fan mail, or what's the opposite of fan mail? Letter bombs.
Hate mail.
From all of them. Hate mail. For some reason, that was blocked out of my head. And you can do that by, of course, emailing us at critclubpodcast@gmail.com or find us on socials at critclubpodcast. And I do believe a little animated birdie told me that we may have some emails. Is this correct, Angela?
Yes, we have an email and also a comment. I don't know if it's barely a comment, really, but we'll start with the email from Frida, as previously mentioned on this podcast. Sent us a message. I received it yesterday, and I was careful not to look at it before I watched the film. And I'm glad I didn't, because she says, "Hello, Crit Club. Watching How to Get Ahead in Advertising was like nails on a chalkboard. I hated that main character so much. Watching him was physically painful. I love a puppet, and not even that talking boil could rally my good graces. While I agreed with the messaging the film was promoting, especially while I was viewing it through a lens where back in the day this notion of being sold to was new to the general population, that main character's performance or actor's performance was so grating that she became physically angry. I hated this film. It really got under my skin and bothered the hell out of me. Enough to wake up and tell you how much I hated it. To be fair, she sent this yesterday at 6:40 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Rita, however, sorry to keep you awake.
She loves you guys and asks us all to keep up the great work. Frida, you keep emailing and get your friends to email.
We love you so much, Frida. Thank you for emailing.
You know, I'm sure there are other people out there with lots of opinions about what we watch. My friend Andy mentioned that there was like some sort of navigation thing on the first Monkey Island video game that had like a head, how to get ahead in navigation. I don't know if you all recall that
I do.
As being LucasArts game players, but a little video game reference.
And that was the comment.
Yeah, that was it.
There were some other things. Corey, was there anything in Simpsons that spoofed on? For some reason, it was like tickling my head, but I couldn't remember anything in Simpsons that this spoofed on, because it feels like Simpsons would have spoofed on this.
I know, it feels like they would have. I just had thoughts of like when the Boyle started having sex with the wife, I was thinking of when like Homer got replaced by that like German accented Homer and stuff. It's like, now we will have the fish, it's German sex. And she's like, okay. I thought of like this interloper sleeping with him. I thought that is not a direct reference.
This movie made me think of the Michael Keaton vehicle Multiplicity, which is way more enjoyable than this movie. For Michael Keaton's.
It made me think of an episode of Futurama where Leela has the singing, I guess it's a growth on her butt or something. Yeah.
I mean, there is the Mr. Burns getting grafted onto Homer's shoulder. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Thought of that.
Classic.
There's also, bringing this back to Dungeons and Dragons, there is the monster called the Ettin, which actually has a giant with two heads. And I guess one could imagine an origin story where one of those heads was possibly originally a Boyle.
Or an advertiser.
Yeah.
Well, I think, that's going to do it for the first part of this show. And again, please reach out to us. And thank you to Frida and Angela's friend for the comment. Please, listeners, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this and other movies, future and past. CritClubPodcast@gmail.com or find us on socials, Threads and Instagram @CritClubPodcast. Please find us there. But before we go, we have our last segment here that's just a little something we like to call, What Else Are You Watching? And I'll, since I went with Wizard Chris last for the very beginning of this, I'll go with him first right now and ask him what else he's watching.
This is outrageous. Outrageous.
Who's running this podcast?
A couple of things. Still watching True Detective season 4, Night Country. Super fun. I love all of the cold, chilly mystery of it all. I took time, actually. I've had some free time to sit and binge watch the first season of True Detective, which is classic TV. Really holds up on a second viewing. I find that season just like such remarkable television.
I'm glad you say that, because that was, I haven't started Night Country yet because I wanted to rewatch season 1 because it's been since it aired.
Yeah.
And so I downloaded it all and I'm excited to watch that. That's great that it holds up.
Yeah, it's super, it's just like such a good like messed up like noir cop or yeah, detective story.
Yeah, we watched that a few months ago.
Yeah,
that's good.
If you want, the King in Yellow that the guy talks about at the very end. Mm. I've read through a lot of those stories.
Chambers.
You can talk offline. Those are some insanely good horror stories. If you're interested,
check it out, folks. Ambrose Bierce, Robert Chambers. It's the good stuff. So season 4, season 1, and also I have been watching the Netflix series Delicious in Dungeon, which is super fun. Anybody watching that? Anybody familiar?
Is that the anime or the animation from Japan that
Yeah.
I remember when the manga came out and I wanted to read it. Is it good? Is it good watching?
It is super fun. It's about people who live in like a pretty standard like D&D universe. Death is common. You just got to get rezzed and all that kind of stuff. And I suspect that the movie or the show, because it's an anime series, I suspect it will get into like the weird sad parts of living in an RPG universe. But it's a show about a party of adventurers trying to rescue one of their number from being digested by a dragon. And their solution to getting there fast is, well, we'll just eat what we find and slay in the dungeon. So each episode features a lot of tasty food, featuring cooked monsters. You know, it's just one of those like pleasant aspects of like anime or like a Japanese series that they're just like, oh, we're gonna do a food fantasy series. And it's very funny and I'm enjoying it a lot and recommend everybody check it out, especially if you like awesome. Roast basilisk and Ooh. Things of that nature.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's what I got two things.
That's great. Angela, I'd love to hear what you're watching.
What else are you watching?
Oh my god, I'm obsessed right now with Scavenger's Reign, which is on Max, and it's about a freighter ship in deep space that has a calamity, and some people survive and end up on a wildly inhospitable planet full of beauty and monsters, and we watch how past human interactions have impacted the choices that the characters make now, and we learn, you know, what actually happened on the ship to cause it to crash. It is eerie, mysterious, and the music is synthy deliciousness. It's one of the most mysterious and beautiful. If you love Adventure Time, if you love Hilda, you will love this show. There's an element of horror to it that I usually don't like, but it's just done so well that I find myself glued to the screen. So I highly, 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 highly recommend it. There's only 10 episodes. And I have...
What was it called again?
Scavenger's Reign.
Scavenger's Reign.
R-E-I-G-N, Reign.
Mm-hmm.
And the story takes unexpected turns. The plotting is fantastic. I also, if you liked Blue Eye Samurai, which is not like... The only comparison I can make to it is that there are surprising and satisfying plot turn points that you don't necessarily see coming. That was my watch. That's all I've had time for, sadly. And I have not seen Poor Things again for the fourth time. But stay tuned, listeners.
There's still time.
There's still
time. I saw
time.
Poor Things.
Oh, wait, you saw it. You saw Poor Things, Corey. Oh, should I wait for your turn and let you talk about it?
Well, it sounded like you were wrapping up.
Corey's turn.
I am wrapping
up.
I got to ask him what else he's watching. Corey, what else are you watching?
Thanks. we're nothing if not orderly around here. Watch Poor Things. It's really good. It's really, really good. I'm not entirely sure what the message or the morals of the movie are, but as far as like creating a captivating and beautiful and, you know, creative film experience, yeah, it's a really, really good movie. Very much enjoyed it.
Did you see it on a big screen or a little screen?
Yeah, we went to the movies to go see it, which is a pretty rare occurrence around here. But
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, nice. No, it's really good.
Very nice.
And then I guess the other thing is just like me and Noah like binge watched the new Rick and Morty season. Season 7 came out, and it's good. There's a couple stinkers in it, and there's a couple like really good episodes. But I don't know. This is their first season without Justin Roiland, who. You know, went through his whole like sort of Me Too stuff or whatever, and they got rid of him, and the voices that they're replacing from him are like, because he voiced Rick and Morty and then a lot of other secondary characters and stuff, and they did a good job, and you really can't tell.
But wasn't he charged with holding somebody against their will?
Yeah, there was some sort of, was that him?
Yeah.
I can't yes. keep all these things straight.
Yeah.
I remember they got rid of
him. I wanted to clarify because it felt like a bit more than Me Too.
Maybe
stuff.
It was.
Yeah.
I just remember like him like sexting with like a minor and stuff. Like that's the stuff that sticks in my head with it.
But then also he was charged with a felony.
Okay. Yikes. Oh, you're right. Yeah. Like there was like his but it was like a partner.
Which I think was dropped. I don't think he was convicted. I just want to clarify.
Right, sure.
That there was, yeah.
But yeah, season 7 is good. The spaghetti episode was a particular highlight. I don't know. I like Rick and Morty. I'll keep watching it.
Great.
Bitter, what else are you watching?
I guess I'm still going through a bit of a weird lull, and that extended when I entered into another one of these fucking weird things that I go through where I did go to the movie theaters this weekend and I saw American Fiction.
Oh, I'm keen to hear about this.
And here we are. It's another one of these where everyone is going to love it. It's got fucking 96% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I found it a very flawed movie. Mm-hmm. Like, so much so, Frida, if you're still listening, I fucking woke up in the middle of the goddamn night and was just like still thinking about all of the problems I had with American Fiction. And I don't know how to address this. Listeners, please, I'm happy to talk it through. I haven't had a conversation with anybody else who's seen it because I have so many pressing questions because it felt like two sketches of two different movies that were kind of laid on top of each other, and it tried for some surreal slappy goofiness but also some real deep heartfelt drama with pretty thinly like propped up characters. I don't know. I saw it. That, what else am I watching? I watched that. I saw it, and I am going to have to deal with this for the next probably 6 months of people mentioning it and they're asking my opinion, and I'll have to say I really didn't enjoy it. this happens all the time, folks.
Flawed.
I'm a fucking hater. It happens all the goddamn time. Don't ask me about Ted Lasso. Don't ask me about Schitt's Creek. It's fine. We're fine. We're all getting through it. On the plus side, I have been playing a really fucking solid game for the middle of winter. Me and our friend Fowler, we're just kind of hanging around and looking for something to play. And it's not a multiplayer game, but we decided to start playing at the same time. Yakuza Like a Dragon.
These games are very silly.
Yeah, which I've never played any Yakuza game at all, and this is like a turn-based combat system.
Okay.
Like, sort of like, and it's just a really great January middle of winter game of like running around and silly shit happens, and cutscenes are way too long, but there's so much goofiness and heart and charm that you forget it for that you forgive it. The main character, Ichiban Kasuga, is his name, is just like an all-timer. I think one of the reasons I wanted to play this is a brand new, like a sequel to this came out in the past couple weeks, and I was like, oh, I always meant to play that. And he's just an all-timer. It's just a real fun, it's the middle of winter, what the fuck else should do, and let's run around and look under vending machines for change. And which is something you do, and eat, you know, good food with your bros that you're hanging out with at a party. I don't know. Yakuza Like a Dragon. It's great. It's on Game Pass. It was wonderful. Have you played any of the Yakuza games, Wizard?
I played one. I can't remember which one. I just remember
there's so many.
There's so many, and like, I just remember like a blur of like these like very silly, like very high drama, plots of with like slapstick characters. Like, it's like they're bizarre, like silly games. Mm-hmm. But I do remember like punching and kicking a lot of people.
Yeah. Insane amounts of mini games.
Yeah.
So many mini games. Like, there's one of you, sorry spoilers for this old game, but of you going to watch a movie, and it's a mini game of keep him from falling asleep, the main character from falling asleep in the middle of this movie theater. Complete with like, you know, people with goat or lamb's heads on that are trying to cast a spell on you. And it's just such a goofy, charming game that is just knows what it's doing, is excited about what it's doing, and I feel like it just has won me over with its heap of charm. I really enjoying this game. Yeah. Anybody else?
Can I ask a game question of everybody?
Of course.
Are you all still playing Baldur's Gate 3?
Not.
Yeah. Whenever
much,
my party has yeah. time.
I gave it up.
I'm waiting for my party, my other bros, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. There was an article that came out where there's a high percentage of people who drop off the game after the second act because the second act is so intense. Mm-hmm. I just got so bored by Shar's Gauntlet that I was like, this feels too much like work to me. This doesn't feel like an escape. I have enough problems, which made me sad because I really liked that game otherwise.
Oh, and I should say to Corey, you should play Lies of P. It's great. I've also been like slowly making my way through that over the past month, month and a half. It's stellar. Yeah. It's fucking stellar.
I plan on it.
It is. Yeah, it's fucking stellar. I think I'm probably over halfway through it now. But speaking of all of that.
All of our friends are all talking lately about Elden Ring. Like, everyone's like going back in to play Elden Ring again. I think I might wait. I think there's supposed to be some big DLC coming.
New DLC is on the way, so everybody's kind of gearing up for that.
Yeah, so I think that I might wait until that drops, but I'm sort of craving getting back into that again. But that's also just like it's a huge time and emotional commitment.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap it up there, folks. Let's wrap up this episode of Crit Club. I really appreciate you all talking about this movie, talking about How to Get Ahead in advertising. I think it was a good conversation. I'm going to try to nurse this wound that I've delivered upon Wizard.
No, it's not true. Yeah, just, that's fine. Just adventures we take together.
No, this is me and how I live. But I'm very excited to watch next week. What are we watching, Wizard?
Oh, we're going to get some pulpy goodness from Ken Russell's Gothic.
Ugh.
Sexy Writer's Retreat.
I'm so sold. Well, listeners, thank you all for listening in. Please send us whatever you'd like at critclubpodcast@gmail.com or find us there on socials. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for chatting this through. And I can't wait to talk about Gothic. Thank you all. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.